All right, well, let's go ahead and get back into what we have been talking about. We are working towards building the Christian household, a distinctly biblical Christian household. And we have moved to the phase where we talk about child rearing. And we began by talking about the two overarching commands for children in Scripture, which are, what are the two? Children are to obey and honor. Okay, now those aren't the same thing, but they are obviously connected. And obedience and honor begins where? In the heart. That's right. It begins in the heart. And the fountain or the source of true, genuine Christian obedience and true, genuine Christian honor, the source or the fountain of it, is love and fear produced by the Spirit of God through the means that He typically produces those things. The child is to, in their heart, ideally, love and fear their parents in the appropriate, right, biblical definitions of those terms. And the parents are to cultivate that love and that fear in the right biblical ways. Others who help, you know, grandparents and fellow church members are also to help cultivate that attitude of love and fear in the home. Who in the home is primarily responsible for creating an environment or an atmosphere of love and obedience, or obedience and honor, and love and fear? Who is primarily responsible? The father is primarily responsible. The wife is called by God to also be responsible, but in the helper role. And that's ideally what the Christian household would look like. Now, if love and honor and fear, if that stays in the heart, then it's not truly Christian. Honor without works is dead. Amen? Faith without works is dead. Love without works is dead. It has to work its way out. And so we're beginning today to talk about how honor works its way out on the outside. Pastor Joe gave us one example last time. In his household, they use honorific titles like mom and dad. And they say yes, sir, and no, sir. Were you here for that, Rebecca? He had some other things to say, but we won't go into that. but there were certain ways in which honor is manifest on the outside. In church, how is honor manifest? There are certain ways that you manifest your honor one for another, and your honor for elders and pastors, your honor for other people's spouses, your honor for everyone involved. And in the home, there's ways in which we manifest honor as well. And so we'll begin with a quote. A child's disrespect of their parent or dishonor of their parent is disrespect of the very means that God has ordained to do the child good. So this is a big deal. God has ordained to do good for children primarily through their parents. And if a child dishonors mom and dad, ultimately they're dishonoring God. And they are dishonoring the very means that God has ordained to do them good. They're spiting their face to cut off their nose. They're biting the hand that feeds them. They are wanting to reap the fruits while chopping at the root. You have to honor your parents. That is the primary means that God uses to do good to you. Even if your parents aren't perfect, God has always chosen imperfect people to do His perfect will. Amen? All right. So, very important topic. Here's where we deduce, this is one of the thousands of places in which this is deduced, the multitude of commands given by God to children to hear, to hearken. That's a word we need to revive. Hearken to my words, little ones. Hear, hearken, give ear, give heed, mark and observe the words of their parents. The Bible teaches this over and over and over again. This implies that children must cultivate and be trained. They have to cultivate it in their own heart. They have to work on it, right, kids? You have to work on this stuff. It doesn't come natural. And you have to be trained by your parents. It doesn't come natural. There's not like a Montessori school you can go to, and in your own timing and whenever you feel like it's the best time, you finally just choose to honor. It's not how humans work. They have to be trained, and it has to be cultivated, oftentimes against their own will, against their own sinful will. And they have to be trained and cultivated specifically in silence and patience. Okay, that's what we want to talk about mostly today, silence and patience in children. How does a child demonstrate honor to his mom and dad? By silence and patience. Okay? Any thoughts or any questions on that? Do you like the sound of that? You know, a Christian... I don't have a problem with that. If grandpa and grandma are in the room and little kids are in the room, the little kids should not be dominating the tone and the culture of the room. Make sense? If adults are in the room, the children should be taking cues from the grown-ups. Right. I often tell my children, if mom and dad are exciting and dancing around the living room, then you get to be excited and dance around, mostly mom, but, you know, then you get to dance around the living room. But if mom and dad are sitting quietly, partially in the dark with a lamp on, reading a book, and you walk into the room and it's dead silent, don't start jumping around and hollering and, you know, demanding this and wrestling on the, you know, living room rug. No, that is not practicing proper restraint and silence and honor of your parents. If you just feel the urge at this moment to wrestle around on the ground, go outside where your parents won't be disrupted. But this is something that has to be worked on. It has to be trained by the parents, and it has to be cultivated by the children and the parents as well. Silence and patience. Brother Henry.
Grandchildren now are the subject of conversation.
Right. They are child-centered is the phrase that is often used, and it's used that way as if it's a good thing. There's child-centered schools and child-centered education and child-centered church children's programs on Sunday morning. Lots of Xboxes are involved. There's child-centered this and child-centered that. This is not how the Bible commands us to raise our children. They should not grow up in a world thinking that they are the center of the universe. I mean, how many times have we heard that and said that? They are born assuming they are. They're born into the world. They assume fundamentally they're the center of it. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. You know that, right? What is the heart of foolishness, though? Foolishness, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. That doesn't mean the fool believes in neutrality. The fool believes he is the God. He is the wise one. He is the all-knowing one. His will is right. Children are born that way. And they have to be taught how to honor. They have to be taught to honor. And the first thing you have to teach them is that we honor in this household through a lot of things, but especially through silence and patience. Okay? Now, of course, there's a way to speak. We're going to get to that. But first and foremost, silence and patience. All right.
Do you think some of it could come from children are always in this culture placed together, always in children's church or children's things that are children oriented, not necessarily where children are placed with adults or children are placed with people that are older
children, yeah.
You know, so they're always the center in things, you know.
Yeah. I think that is part of it, yes. You know, that's a method, and methods, you know, you don't want to confuse the method with the principle, but some methods do flow from certain philosophies. And so it would be, even if you had them in the same skill level, like, for example, piano lessons, you kind of have to group them according to skills for it to be beneficial, for the time to be efficient. But in that circumstance, no one puts the children in a circle and says, you bang away on the ivories, let's see what magic you make, you know, and then get paid $100 an hour. We expect a body of knowledge, which is absolute and established and existed before the children were born, standards of beauty, standards of time signatures and meter and notes and how the piano works, to be transmitted from the teacher who knows it to the child who doesn't know it. You understand what I'm saying? Now, what happens, what is common sense in the realm of piano has been removed in the realm of the humanities, the liberal arts, truth, philosophy, religion. so that you'll have in the humanities departments, in liberal arts educations, in the English class or the humanities class, you'll have people not only grouped according to age level, but then you'll have them determining what is true, what is good, and what is beautiful, instead of it being transmitted from a master or from a teacher. And that's really when it becomes horrific, because then you just have equal levels of ignorance transmitting to one another. Let's share in our mutual ignorance. This is not what we want. And so if you can mix that up a little bit, if you can have older kids, if you can have other adults, you can see it really, I think it's just much better if you can possibly do it. But sometimes for the sake of efficiency and time, you do have to group people according to levels. You wouldn't want to put me in the same literature class with JD and then teach us both. Although JD is pretty advanced for his age. he'd be frustrated. I'd be frustrated. So you understand what I'm saying. So Ellen, did you want to... You're doing it for practical reasons because they're undisciplined.
Right.
Am I picking up what you're laying down? They haven't been trained in silence and patience.
Some of them have.
Some have. Is there someone in here that's in your class? Well, oh, Jordan's in his class. I didn't know you taught it there at Beauchamp.
Yeah.
Jordan is a great example for his peers. Am I right?
Yes.
What you think, Amari? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Somehow the entire class ends up with that same answer.
Oh, someone with influence and charisma.
Right. And it just, like,
future false prophet. Yeah. Yeah, that's, we often teach, I teach them in logic that the tone at which you say something has no validity on whether or not it's true. You know, we say, God is one, yet God is in all of us. You know, ooh, I like that. That's false. All right. How honor is manifest outwardly. Let's talk about this a little bit more. We're manifesting honor outwardly. We must demand that our children have honor in their hearts, but that they also manifest it outwardly. We want both. We have to discipline for both. You understand? So sometimes they might manifest honor on the outside in a not so great way. But you know they've tried and they want to do what's right. You got to be careful with that. You understand we're cultivating it first and foremost in the heart. That's going to be through godly instruction, through biblical instruction, through modeling it, through praising it, through showing how to honor mom, how to honor dad. You want them to want it. But then you also have to instruct it and enforce it on how to do it on the outside. And how to show honor is not always the same. It is a little fluid, and it does have some cultural nuances to it. You don't demonstrate outward honor the exact precise way today as you did then or from here to Malaysia. There's going to be some nuances in how honor is demonstrated on the outside. It would be a dishonor to not take your shoes off in some cultures as you enter the household because the household is sacred ground. But in our culture, that hadn't really been a thing. There's other things. So, silence and speech, that's what we're talking about today, how to manifest honor outwardly. Speech to and about parents must be seasoned with respect. Others must help them remember this, and this is done by wisely restraining, limiting, and controlling speech. They must learn silence, patience, and listening. And what do you think about this? Restraining the child's speech. Now's not the right time. I want to listen to you, but now's not the right time. That's enough. We're in the car. There's 12 of us in one vehicle. We have 4 hours to go. Stop talking. Get out your book. Huh? Right? You're in a classroom. There's 24 of you. We have to do things right and in order. You raise your hand before speaking. You control your speech. Don't let your mouth be the boss of you. Is all that good? Right? But Pastor Brandon, what about their self-expression? What about those good things on the inside that need to come out? right? Irshad, did you have a comment or a question? Hold that thought. We're going to get to that. Hold that thought. That's good. Good point. We're going to get to that as well. Ooh, tone of voice. Hold that thought. We'll get to that as well. Silence, just to give you the order of things, silence demonstrates honor in two ways, not speaking and listening as well. In fact, to heed, to hearken, to obey, to listen to the voice of your father and your mother. The Bible commands this all the time. That implies they have to not be speaking. And it implies that they have to have a teachable spirit and an open ear. Get it? All right. If parents approach, children should stop talking. You know what I mean by approach. I don't mean just like, you know, you passed by the window. I mean, you are entering into their presence with the purpose of engaging them. They should look up, and they should acknowledge you, and they should wait, and they should be patient, and they should listen. This is not only true for children and parents. This is true of children. This is true of junior high students. This is true of teenagers. This is true of college students. If you're in your 20s, and you are in the presence of someone in their 40s or 50s, and they walk in the room, and it's just the two of you, you should stop. You should acknowledge, because you've been trained to do this, and you should see if they want to engage you. Now, in our society, it's no longer practice to stand in the presence of your elder, but you do stand at attention, so to speak, in your heart and in your mind and your ears. You all know this, all of you who are older than 40 years old, when you're speaking to someone who's in college or who's in high school and they don't give any body language of attentiveness to you, you intuitively believe or think that they are dishonorable or disrespectful. They're being a punk. They might be shy, right? They might have, you know, just not know how to demonstrate outwardly the signs of honor. But you know the kind of young men that get jobs and that can be trusted with responsibilities and father-in-laws like. You understand what I'm saying? Are the ones who listen up, shake, are teachable, acknowledge, speak back when spoken to. Does that make sense? And this is all; these are all things that have to be taught and cultivated. Moving on. What are some settings in which this can be cultivated and trained? That's for y'all. What are some settings in which the practice of silence and patience can be trained or should be trained? Dinner table. Dinner table? That's great. Church, that's great. And by church, you mean the worship time on the Lord's Day. That's right. So what you're saying is we shouldn't invest large swaths of our budget toward Xboxes and Noah's Ark-themed play parties so that when they come to church for the 1 hour, two times a month, right, because you got to take into consideration football games and travel and soccer and vacations. They come to church for 1 hour twice a month. They come for 1 hour for twice a month, and what happens? They get entertained. And guess what? They want to go back to that church. And mommy and daddy say, Pastor Brandon, if there were just more things for my kids. I know what you mean. You don't know what you mean, though. And I hope you're listening on this recording, right? What else? What are some other settings in which this can be cultivated and trained? In school, absolutely, has to be. They are to be quiet in class. They are to raise their hand when it's time to speak. Why? Because raising hand is godly and a sign of regeneration? No. Right? Some kids are going to be better at this than others. Some kids are going to have a disposition which is more silent. They're going to have a harder time. Their clip's going to get moved, you know, more. That's okay. But the point is we continuously train them to control their speech. Some people talk more than others by personality. You have to take that into consideration, right? You don't want a school of just shy manipulators, right? You understand what I mean? You want to have some rambunctious people, and you're always having to deal with them, but they're probably going to grow up to be the innovators and the mavericks and the leaders. And so you work with all those different personalities. The point is not to save them or fix them or make them perfect. The point is to get them a little bit better. You're training them how to show honor through silence and respect. What are some other settings? Anything else? When mom and dad are speaking, when adults are speaking, that's right. You know, one time, let's just say two adults are talking. They're in their 50s. And a young man of 17 years old comes into the room. Now, what would be a proper, respectful way to approach? There's no emergency, right? What would be normal and proper and respectful? To move it along, right? Depending on how the older people are talking, does it look like a private conversation, you know? What would not be proper is to come in and say, what's up, dudes, right? You're if the two older men have any sort of Christianity, they're going to look at you like, who's your daddy? And, you know, when can I talk to him, right? When should this be started? When must it be started? Look, yeah, you don't have to hold that baby up in the air. But that's the answer. Has to be trained from infancy. The training methods are going to evolve. Obviously, a baby crying is not going to be held to the same standards as a 12-year-old, right? However, there are standards, and there are things you have to consider. And I will just say this from my own personal experience. As a parent, you will learn what the different cries mean, and you have to respond accordingly. That's a pain cry. That's a hunger cry. That's I'm lonely cry. And that's a I'm the boss of you cry, right? Right? And I will use this gift of lungs to boss you around. Dance, puppet. You have to learn all those things, and you got to be careful because you're learning too. You know, every parent has that moment where they're like, "I thought they were being bad, and they're actually, I should have changed their diaper or something like that." Right? So you just got to. You learn. Everybody gets better at it. It's hard to talk now. If you can talk, baby, then you know you're golden. They communicate differently than us. Oh yes. They learn as well. They learn habits. They learn that anger is how to get other people to do what they want. And if you don't restrain that, you're going to have a monster on your hands. Or they learn that self-pity is how they get all their girlfriends to give them more invites. You know, they learn that self-pity is how to get a lot of attention on them. Right? That is also has to be restrained. You don't allow anger or self-pity. Even if it's just coming through cry, you know, you don't allow anger or self-pity to make the world jump. You call it what it is. You know, oftentimes at the academy, I'm walking around, that's a fake cry. You're fake crying, right? And they're like, who taught this guy, you know? I've been doing this a while. That's a fake cry. Your mom is a sucker. But she's going to learn, too, because I'm going to tell her. But that's a fake cry. Right? You got to learn those things.
One that drives me crazy is in the store when you're shopping, and this baby in the cart didn't get its way. And it's like, carry on, carry on.
That's the cliche thing. The baby is screaming, pitching an anger fit to have that candy. And you know they put that candy right at the checkout line just for you. And you are not allowed to cave. You're not allowed to. God says you are not allowed to cave. When you cave, you sin. You understand? And when you reap sin, when you sow sin, you're only going to reap it in return. Tenfold, a hundredfold. You have to stand up for what's right. You are the agent of God. You must teach them proper silence, patience. And this is how we demonstrate honor in the world. This is how we follow Jesus in all of life. Amen? All right. How should this be trained? You got to start as young as possible. How should it be trained? With wisdom, with savvy, with patience. But the two main things are instruction and enforcement. That's from the Apostle Paul tells fathers to train up your children in the instruction and the discipline or chastisement, or, you know, it's literally the word scourge, in the instruction and the discipline of the word. two main things, basically, instruct and enforce. You teach them and you enforce God's standards in your home. You see, are we expecting them to behave as though they are Christians? I hear that all the time. No, we're expecting them to behave like little Hitlers. No, of course we're not expecting them to behave as though they are regenerated Christians. However, what are the means that the Spirit of God uses to call someone to himself? The law and its instruction and its enforcement. One of the means that the Spirit uses to save your child is you expecting them, demanding them, and enforcing their obedience to Jesus' law. They're going to fail. Use that as an opportunity to explain to them why Jesus had to die. You understand what I mean? But you have to instruct and you have to enforce. That's the means that God uses to call them. What are some worldly philosophies which may run contrary to this biblical goal? They're just children. Oh, they're a little angel. Right. They're just children now. You know, don't be so hard on them. Right. That's what people say that don't have to live with them. You do not spank children in public. First of all, you're not supposed to add humiliation to the punishment. You understand that they sin, they go against God's law, and they need to be spanked for dishonor or disobedience. You only spank for dishonor and disobedience. Those are the two things that God commands children. So if you can't fit it into those two categories, if you fit it into the category of they're just children, because that actually is a category, even though when people say it, they don't mean it that way. But there is a category of they can't carry milk as well. They're not as, you know, skilled with their motor skills. They're not as coordinated. Parents that spank over spilled milk and mistakes and child, that is abuse. That is sinful. You only spank over the violations of God's laws. You don't spank over the, your man-made laws. Now, you have to be skilled to know God's laws cover the entire household, even to the point of the tone and the environment of the dinner table. God's laws are very inclusive. But you only spank for those two reasons. But you never spank in public. You never spank adding humiliation to the... You don't spank them in front of their siblings. You understand what I mean? Now, there might be emergencies where they have to be snatched up because their life is in danger or something like that. I'm not talking about that. But you don't carry out, formal instruction and spanking in a way to increase their shame. You know, you pull their pants down in Walmart and spank them in front of strangers. You do not do that. That's what the police do to people sometimes. That's what a police officer did to me when I got pulled over for just trying to eat a burrito. Just trying to eat my breakfast burrito without my shoulder strap. Pulled me over for not having a speeding ticket right out front of Westminster, which I taught at the time. Gotta work on my segues. Yeah. Like that. It's analogous. That's the TSA, actually. That's more of a federal thing than a local thing. They're doing it for our good, for our safety, for our safety. Sir, why do you have this bottle opener? Because I'm innocent until proven guilty. Like, until I'm a man, I'm free. I'm a free man. Get your hands off me, Fed. This is all recorded, by the way. All right. So some worldly philosophies, you can see this, the self-expression nonsense, the what is good is inside of them, your job is to draw it out. That is the essence of government school education. That's the essence of secular education, that man is good inherently, and that education is there to draw it out in the child's timing, right? In the child's choice. All of that, it works against this. There is no law. The relativeness of truth and relativeness of law in the scriptures, law is from God, and it is to be instructed and enforced onto the child, and it is to be used alongside of the gospel of Jesus Christ to shape their heart and their lifestyle and their behavior. All right. What about chattering, excessive boldness, self-expression, whimsy? Some of these words they have, you know, different meanings depending on when you use them. Whimsy. You know, that's a word that some of you use often, right? Whimsy. Is there a time when whimsy would be appropriate? Yes. But is there a time when whimsy is not appropriate? Little children need to be taught that in certain environments, it's not okay to be cute, right? When you're dealing with certain adults, you need to deal with them respectfully. You're not trying to manipulate them by being cute. And that wears off. You know, the older they get, the more their body parts grow proportionately, they're less cute. And if they've got this, I'm cute to get my way sort of thing going, that's going to be a problem. It's not going to work as well later. It's going to be kind of gross. What about self-expression? You know, I just hate that in general.
Older kids, late teens, might have a problem not conversing with an adult, although they're capable of it.
Yeah. Excessive boldness. You want your children to be confident and bold, but when you have little rugrats approaching adults like they're their equals, you have a child that's not being restrained properly. When a child is, you know how they do, like a chimpanzee, and they're just running in circles everywhere they go, and there's adults, and they're just like grabbing and hugging every adult, and they're just chatterboxing the entire time while everyone's standing around. You have an unrestrained child with a passive father, like, and a doting, overbearing mother. I would bet my year's salary on that. You have to say, hey, this is not a playground, right? We don't run around like chimpanzees headbutting adults in the midsection, right? I feel like that goes without saying, you know. Oftentimes, you know, when we're in the sanctuary, and nobody's perfect about this, but the sanctuary is a place of honor. And there's a certain way to honor the sanctuary, not just because it is the sanctuary, but also because it is not a playground. You understand what I'm saying? It's not, you know, there's people will teach, you know, there's nothing sacred about this place, just a building. The church is the people. It's simplistic to think that way. And you have to understand we're training children for all of life. They need to be able to discern the difference between an office and a playground, right? A retail store and a water park. They have to behave according to the scene. Behavior that doesn't fit the scene is called obscene. And you don't want obscene children, okay? You want your children to be behaving appropriate for the scene, for the setting. And you have to teach them these things. If they don't know it, it's okay. They're little kids. You know, there is a point at which we say, you know, well, they are children, they're learning, but we at least need to be telling them. You know, I walk through the sanctuary in the mornings and I say, hey, guys, go find the playground. That's my way of saying, you know, this is not a playground. This is actually a death trap for people playing full speed. There's a lot of sharp corners, a lot of hard oak, and we have a $5,000 to $6,000 liability. What's that called? Where you have to pay it, the deductible. So go find the playground. All right. How about the frantic need to immediately be heard? Mom. Oh, look, we had one of these. We driving, back seat. Mom. All right. Mom. And finally, mom goes, what? Right. That's classic. That child is behaving inappropriately. They see that it's not the right time. They see that mom is doing something else, and they are insisting on being heard. It's disrespectful. Now, hopefully you learn as a parent to discern the cries of, mom, I am insisting on being heard right now, and mom, there's a, you know, a hornet's nest in the back of the van, right? You have to know the difference. Those should sound different, right? So, and they do, in fact. So there should be no insistence on immediately being heard. You're patient. You're waiting for a proper time. Impatience, you know, rushing off, slinking away while the parents are speaking. There's interruption. But what do I mean by slinking off, slinking away, or rushing off while the parents are in the middle of a sentence? You know which age group is more prone to this behavior. But just like, you know, yeah. You know, I heard it before. And you just kind of, they're like halfway trying to go, and you're still trying to finish. You know, even 15-year-olds, 17-year-olds, whatever, they have to cultivate obedience to Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ requires honor of your parents. You have to work on that. You have to be respectful, and you have to stand there and be patient, not with a look of disgust on your face. You have to work on your body language. You have to work on your facial expressions. One of the biggest temptations for teenagers is to do externally all that honor requires except for the face. For the face, they reserve autonomy. Jesus is Lord of my life except right here. And here, I will look at you as though you are an idiot. Y'all know the look. And the parent is like, you know, do you think I'm dumb? Like, do you think I'm, you got a problem, kid? Like, and then when you say, hey, quit being disrespectful. What? I'm not. Quit accusing me. Quit attacking me. It's like, no, listen, we know what's going on. It's a little bit of contempt in the face, just enough to maintain plausible deniability so that when you're called on it, you can say, you know, you can deny it. It's hypocrisy. It's silliness. You got to work on honoring your parents. You understand? And it's okay as a kid to say, look, I want to be honorable. And that was a mistake. I'm sorry. All right, what were you saying? It's okay to do that. So it doesn't come natural. You got to work on it. A few more things. Giving respectful titles. You don't call your parents by their first name. What are some other things, Mr. or Mrs. in public, when you're speaking to other people, ma'am or whatnot in public? No yo's. Hayes, pointing. What up, bro? Yeah. No screaming your mom or dad's name from the back seat. That'll get you lit up. Using necessary words. This is true of every Christian. We should speak that which is necessary. We shouldn't just be like rambling chatterboxes. You know, one of the guards at your mouth should be, is it godly? Is it true? Is it beautiful? Is it necessary? Or am I just rambling on about things and gossiping about random stuff and busybody and everybody's business? This is not necessary to say. I don't need to tell anyone this. Same thing with kids. If it's not necessary, if there's chattering and asking a million questions a minute, you understand with children, asking question after question after question is a way of controlling the environment. And they do that when they feel out of control or awkward or not sure about where you're headed with all of this, and they want to know. So that question. You just sit back and relax. I used to tell my children and my students, say, listen, you know, I am the river. You are a stick in that river. Just go with the flow. Yeah. They thought that was funny. Of course, I'm not the river, but you know. Not demanding to be heard, speaking humbly, not contemptuously. No arrogant, contemptuous facial expressions or hand gestures, speaking humbly. Hey, I'm going to be out tomorrow night. Oh, right? You mean, may I go out, and here's who I'm going to be with, and this is what we will be doing, because God has called you to protect me, and I want to make your job easy, because I love and honor you. See, that would be nice, right? Waiting for a fitting time to speak. When dad comes home or our mom comes home and you walk in the house, there's a pile of laundry, right? The dog has peed on the living room floor. There's dishes. Neighbor is knocking at the door. You've been working for 17 hours and you walk in the door. Dad, there's a new book I want to get on Kindle. Can I get no? Now's not the right time. You got to wait for an appropriate time. 10:30 at night, mom and dad are in bed. You decide to get talkative. It's not the right time. It's not the right time. You got to go with the flow, be respectful, and be honorable. By quick, willing, ready, cheerful responses to parents. Amen? Now, one last word for parents. You may, quote, need your child to be your equal or your friend. You may not have enough friends. You may have a daddy complex, by which I mean you just are insecure. And you need a child to complete you. Right? If you need a child to complete you, the last thing they will do is complete you. You don't need a mini-me, right? For those of you old enough to know that. If you need a child to be your equal or your friend, you're going to spoil that child. You're going to ruin them, and you're going to ruin any possible potential for them to be your friend one day when they're an adult. Okay? But right now, children need parents that God has given them, and parents must instruct and enforce God's will, not train the child to fulfill their perceived needs. You understand what I mean? I just need someone to talk to. I just need someone to be my friend. I just need someone to complete me. I just need someone to live vicariously through. Don't do that, right? God knows what you really need, and what you really need is to learn how to be a selfless parent and give that child what they need. That's what will really complete you. All right, so you got to die to self to gain the self. You got to go down to go up. All right, you got to be last to be first. Aaron. You mean it's hard to respect them, but you're cultivating it in the grace of the Spirit of God. Yeah, I understand. Just, you know. Yeah, I see that.
But it's easy to see, even in myself, like I can't do that to my kid. Because when he gets old enough and he has kids, he's not gonna trust me with his kids.
Sure.
He's not going to respect me. Like, he'll have no reason to respect me because I've just...
And he'll do exactly what you do. He's going to model your parent. Most of us will be the kind of parents that our parents were. So, good. You reap what you sow. If you don't die to self as a parent, you know, if you don't do what you're supposed to do with your child, you're not going to reap those beautiful benefits of when the child gets older, generally speaking. So, all right. Well, y'all have a great Lord's Day. And Merry Christmas.